Our host needs no introduction.
His name is...
A name so simple it rolls right off your tongue.
His name is James... No, his name is... James Lawrence! Lawrence!
Try again.
Forrest Lone... Lars! Lars!
No! Chuck Jaffe.
Yes! 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 We're like this!
I'll say it again so you remember, okay? This is Money Life with Chuck Jaffe.
Wow! 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 All I can say is wow!
Please do not overdramatize these proceedings.
And now, here's Chuck.
He's one in a million.
He sure is.
Good morning and welcome to Money Life. It's Money Life for July the 28th. Really? We're going to start making mistakes in the first minute. Okay, well, this is a very different Money Life today. We're not doing the normal thing. It's not going to feel normal at all.
And now for something completely different.
Yeah. So let me tell you what's completely different about today's show. First off, our regulars. They're not here. Tom Lydon? Uh-uh. Bob Powell? Nope. So no regulars today. Now, we're still going to do one regular segment. That's because we're going to do the same thing we did last week with Tom Lydon, where Tom picked an ETF of the week, but he didn't want to record it because he was going to be away. And when you start talking about of the week and things happening in the market, you have to be a little bit cautious. So, in his place is Simeon Hyman. He is head of investment strategy at ProShares. So now you know it's going to be a ProShares fund that is our ETF of the week. But beyond that, I'll let you wait until we get there. So, Simeon Hyman starts us off today with the ETF of the week. But again, it's more me interviewing Simeon than it would be normally where Tom, yes, I'm interviewing Tom, but Tom is giving his opinion on the fund. Nobody who runs a fund is going to say, well, hey, it's above the 200-day moving average. You ought to buy it now. That's never going to happen. So instead, we'll talk about how the fund's supposed to work, what it's supposed to do, what's appropriate with it, all those sorts of things, and we'll go from there. Now, with Bob Powell out, we did something we don't do very often, which is we've got three big interviews today. They're all in the regular time. Sometimes we'll take two big interviews and we'll expand it. Now, we were supposed to have a Money Life market call today. That got canceled. And the truth is we had extra big interviews that were already done. How does that happen? Well, sometimes we'll do book interviews, the book interview, in advance. So today we're going to have two book interviews and one regular big interview. All three are big interviews, but they are all different.
Yes, we are all different.
I'm not.
They are all different. So, first up, it's going to be Daniel Crosby, Dr. Daniel Crosby, author of The Laws of Wealth, Psychology, and The Secret to Investing Success. Then, Jason Vitug. He is the author of You Only Live Once, The Roadmap to Financial Wellness and A Purposeful Life. After that, Jeff Rosenkrantz. He is with Cedar Ridge Partners. He helps to run the Cedar Ridge Fund that looks at unconstrained credit. It's a long-short credit fund. And credit is something that the credit market is something that hasn't been talked about a whole heck of a lot since the Brexit. But it's where we actually saw the kinds of things in the Brexit that people were saying, like, oh, there's a and the buying was frenetic and the pace was really weird. You also have things in the credit market where you're talking about, you know, high yield energy credits. Right now, just nutty with everything that's been going on in the oil market. So that will be our third big interview today. So three big interviews, but an unusual ETF of the week. Yeah, I would say that this is a show that is different.
And now for something completely different.
No, now we're going to give you something that's the same. That's the part of the show where I tell you about the show itself. I'm Chuck Jaffe, senior columnist for MarketWatch, host of this show every weekday. You can find my columns online at MarketWatch.com. I've got one going up today. If you want to make sure that you don't miss it, follow me on Twitter at MKTWJaffe. To make sure you're getting stuff about the show, well, check out our website. It's MoneyLifeShow.com. We're on Twitter at MoneyLifeShow. We appreciate it when you drop us notes and questions and comments. You can do that by writing to me at ChuckMoneyLifeShow.com. Now, all of that said, we've got big things planned for tomorrow. I think we will have a market call tomorrow, but I do want your opinion. I always say I want your opinion. I want to know how you like this show, because this is a different way for us to do things. And every now and again, we've done it something like this in the past, but this is pretty unusual for us. And that being the case, well, I particularly like to know when you guys find something that is different, because it's not necessarily hard for us to do the usual stuff. Sometimes we can't do it from a timing standpoint, but we can sort of always try to do the usual.
Round up the usual suspects.
Yeah, we can do that. But I've got some other things that I've been working on, some project stuff that has made it difficult for me to deal with some cancellations and what have you. So we got great things planned, but again, a different sort of show. If you're here for the market call, I'm sorry to disappoint you. I hate when I disappoint you guys, but no market call today. I think we'll have one tomorrow, but I'm not sure. So that's the problem where you lose a guest and you got to do it on short notice. So now you know how to reach us. You know what's coming. All there is to do is to start the show. Again, it's Money Life for July the 28th. Thanks so much for joining me. One more time, our lineup, Simeon Hyman to Dr. Daniel Crosby, then Jason Vitug and Jeff Rosenkrantz. We'll start things off with the ETF of the week when Money Life returns right after this message.
Looking for alternative ETF strategies? Direction provides separate and distinct audiences with flexible investment tools to manage risk and execute short-term strategies. For more information, go to directionshares.com.
Well, I don't favor talking to vermin, but I'll talk to you just this once.
Exchange-traded funds are the investment world's new frontier.
You better listen.
But with so many choices and styles, the ETF world is a bit like the Wild Wild West, filled with new issues and ideas, but fraught with the same old dangers of investing.
If you're looking for trouble, I'll accommodate you.
Every Thursday, Tom Lydon of ETF Trends comes to Money Life to tell us about one ETF that is wearing the white hat right now.
Take it easy. We are the good guys.
He'll point out the good, the bad, and the ugly as he tells you which investment is worth taking a shot on.
That's good shooting.
And names his ETF of the week.
Now, Wild West.
Well, Tom Lydon has named an ETF of the week, but he's not here to talk about it. As we did last week when Tom took his first week of summer vacation, Tom has picked an executive from a fund company to come in, talk about a specific fund that I will then get to talk with the executive about. And we're fortunate today because we're being joined by Simeon Hyman, who is the head of investment strategy for ProShares. ProShares.com, ProFunds.com, where you go for more information if you want on the fund we are talking about. Now, that being the case, our ETF of the week is the ProShares Russell 2000 Dividend Growers ETF. Ticker symbol SMDV. So, Simeon Hyman, welcome to Money Life.
Glad to be here. Happy to sub in for Tom this week.
So, we're talking about the ProShares Russell 2000 Dividend Growers ETF. That is ticker symbol SMDV. And if I knew nothing else about it, I know that it is the number one fund in Morningstar's small cap category. So, you obviously, know, it's had a good record, but this also has a long track record, right?
The ETF was launched actually just over a year ago.
Okay.
And it is indeed number one in its class. It has been a good run. Of course, we don't like to just refer to short-term track records. I think the important thing here, in addition to its very strong recent performance, is to understand that this is an important manifestation of the dividend growth strategy. You know, a lot of people are familiar with it in large cap. We have a great ETF ticker, NOBL, which applies a dividend growth strategy to U.S. large cap. And people have heard about dividend growth as a large cap strategy. But the truth is it works really well across the capitalization spectrum, and it works very nicely in small cap. It's funny to think about it. Who are these companies that can keep growing their dividends year after year after year, but they don't become big companies? And they're there. It's a little bit of a needle in a haystack. You got 59 out of 2,000, but they're growing nicely, growing those dividends, growing their earnings, and delivering important results and results that are better than the underlying Russell 2000 or general small cap space.
Now, people wind up hearing about that little dichotomy there. It's the Russell 2000, but in this case, it's 59 stocks. So that being the case, how much concentration is there and how much concentration risk is there? Is this fund going to be more volatile because it's more concentrated, or is 59 enough that you're getting that sort of high octane performance that you want without necessarily adding a lot of juice on the volatility side?
Well, you know, in fact, following the dividend growth strategy, it's really the opposite. The volatility of SMDV has been less than the overall small cap market, and that's because these are high quality companies that are delivering that consistent dividend growth, which of course must come from underlying earnings and cash flow growth. So the higher returns that you're getting, and you know, since inception through the end of last quarter, SMDV had returned 14.09%. The Russell 2000 that period was down a little over a percent. And that happened with volatility in standard deviation terms, about 14%, and the Russell had 18% volatility. So 59 is plenty to be well diversified. The real question is, what is your screen delivering? And in this case, that quality aspect has delivered the ability to give those results with actually lower volatility. And to some extent, it's almost cake and eat it too. You're getting some of that classic small cap premium, but with a more stable return stream.
And you're not just getting that small cap premium, you're getting a premium on the premium, right? Because you're getting a better ROE, a better return on equity than the Russell 2000 overall. So the premium that you get for small caps would be the ROE of the entire index. You're really just taking that the cream off of the top of that, right?
You are indeed, and that's exactly right. And to your point, the return on equity is higher for the companies in SMDV, another example of that quality aspect that's enabling you to get that outperformance with the lower volatility. And by the way, you're also getting a nice dividend yield. This is not a strategy that stretches for yield in a way that, you know, might not be the smart, put you in kind of a more of a cyclical box. You're just looking at the dividend growers. Still, it's a yield of almost 2.5%, which is a lot for small caps. So it's not a stretch for yield, but it's a nice little icing on the cake.
And that's important, too, because that stretch for yield side of things, that's where investors get into trouble in times like this, right?
I think that's right. You know, we don't know when rates are going to rise. Sooner or later, they might. And, you know, if you're in that, if you're stretching for yield, you're exposed to a bit of cyclicality and a bit of interest rate risk. Again, that might work for a while. We don't know, but when you're focusing on dividend growth, you don't have to worry about, you know, the entry and exit points as much because you have a much more stable approach to generating outperformance.
How often does this fund reconfigure?
So once a year, it tests for its rule of dividend growth, which is that you, to be in the club, you have to have increased your dividend for 10 consecutive years. It tests that once a year. And importantly, the strategy is equally weighted and rebalanced equal weight once a quarter. So that's important because there's, you know, all strategies are comprised of two key things. Go find the stocks, use your rule to identify the stocks, and construct the portfolio. And it turns out that that equal weight is an important way to get the most risk-adjusted performance, the most Sharpe ratio, information ratio, whatever jargon you want to use. It's the best way to deploy the dividend growth screen. So test for inclusion once a year and then rebalance equal weight once a quarter.
It's the ProShares Russell 2000 Dividend Growers ETF. That's SMDV. The ETF of the week is picked by Tom Lydon, as discussed by Simeon Hyman. Simeon, thanks so much for joining me on the show. I look forward to chatting with you again soon.
Thank you.
Simeon Hyman is the head of investment strategy for ProShares. At ProShares on Twitter, ProShares.com, ProFunds.com, both of those websites to learn more. Well, that is a great start to the Thursday, July 28th edition of Money Life. But a great start requires much more, and we have much more. Stay tuned. We're living a money life, and we'll be back in a moment.
Hightower is a groundbreaking team of financial advisors committed to giving you access to best-in-class financial products and services, a practice often overlooked by brokers on Wall Street. Visit HightowerAdvisors.com to learn more about the Hightower difference.
It's time for the book interview here on Money Life. This, of course, the segment of the show that we're doing what would amount to our big interview. It's big interview time, but it's book interview in terms of subject. And the book we are talking about today is a really interesting one. It's called The Laws of Wealth, Psychology and the Secret to Investing Success. It's written by Dr. Daniel Crosby, who, by the way, wrote the New York Times bestseller Personal Benchmark. And Daniel works for Nocturne Capital. If you want more information on his firm, it's nocturnecapital.com. If you want to learn more about the book, go to the Money Life Show recent and upcoming guest page. Find Daniel there, and you'll find a long link that will get you to the book page. And if you want to find out more about Daniel as well, you can follow him on Twitter. He's at Daniel Crosby. But right now, he's here on Money Life. Daniel Crosby, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
You know, I like this book almost in spite of myself. Because as a general rule, and it's funny that I use that phrase, I'm not a big fan of general rules. Like, I sort of sit there, oh, when you talk about, you know, this is immutable in investing, I tend to find that there's lots and lots of different ways. But fundamentally, what we've got here, I don't know that they're laws so much as they're sort of bedrock principles. These are things that if you cross them, it's not like laws where, you know, oh, you've ruin something and what have you. But it is kind of like if you fall on the wrong side of this stuff, if you don't know the basics that are talked about in the book, you're almost destined to do poorly, right?
Yeah, I think so. And I think there's not much that is immutable about investing. And the closest that we can get is talking about some of these psychological laws, because I am long human misbehavior from now to forever. So I think we can count on people to make poor choices sort of from now on out.
Well, let's talk about those poor choices, because how much are they choices and how much are they hardwired into if A happens, then people do B? I mean, are they all actual choices or are they somewhat, you know, reflexes? It's sort of, I think that there are times when, you know, you could no sooner stop this than you could when they give you the hammer on your knee test.
Yeah, so there's, I think I take sort of a middle ground there. So one of the things that I talk about in the book is how much less free will you have than perhaps you think you have. And I talk about liquor stores and how liquor stores are able to manipulate the sales of German beer versus French champagne just by the type of music they pipe in over the loud system. And I talk about violence on the London Tube, depending on a variety of sort of situational factors. And I try and tie that back to investing to say, look, you know, you don't have the sort of restraint that maybe you think you have. And so maybe you put some things in place to keep yourself from making poor decisions. And one of the things that I advocate for in the book is working with a financial professional, not because they know a thing about picking stocks, but because there's someone who can save you from yourself and hold your hand.
Of the various things that you lay out in the book, what's the one? Because I don't want to give away too much of it. And this book is not a heavy read. It's, you know, none of those things. What is the one for you that you sort of go, this is the one that everybody could just automatically ratchet up their performance if they just?
So there, you know, I outlined 10 commandments of investor behavior in the book, these 10 laws. And the first one, and I was intentional about where I put it, is you control what matters most. So Natixis did a fascinating study recently where they spoke with financial advisors, and 83% of financial advisors said, the number one value that I add to my clients is to help them manage their own behavior. then they turn that same question back on the end clients of these advisors and ask 700 or so clients, you know, what does your advisor do for you? And only 6% of them said that managing my behavior is important. So the professional community is finally coming around to this new understanding that managing behavior, managing decision making is a huge value add, but yet the end client is not there yet and still sees the primary benefit of working with a financial professional as stock picking and investment outperformance. So if we could empower investors by helping them understand how much of this is in their control, by just controlling the controllable, as Jason Zweig calls it, and doing the blocking and tackling of investing, people would keep a lot more of their money and would feel more empowered in the process.
One of the things that you talk about is that investors cannot do this alone.
And right.
That, to me, is an area where I am prone to disagree. I do believe that most people can lay down what would be a simple, easy, you understand it's not perfect, it's not optimized, it's not whatever kind of portfolio without necessarily having an advisor. That said, most people can't do it because emotionally they have a tough time. Is the problem the emotions or is the problem the skill level?
There is no problem with skill level. I mean, you could spend a weekend Googling asset allocation and frankly come out knowing all that you ever need to know about constructing a well-diversified portfolio that's frankly at least as optimized as what you'd get at some, you know, white shoe financial planning firm. What you have difficulty doing, the research suggests, is sticking to that plan. So again, all the research from everyone from Aon Hewitt to InvestNet to Vanguard and others shows that people who receive financial advice from a financial professional do 2 to 3% better per year than those who do not. And it has nothing to do with skill, and it has everything to do with the very thing that we started this interview with, which is restraint bias, which is we think that we're going to make the right decision in the moment, and we tend not to. You know, most Americans could lay out a great diet plan for you too, but it's very hard to stick with in the moment. So it's absolutely not a matter of skill, and it absolutely is a matter of restraint.
And that proves what I do say about financial advisors, which is I say that the reason you hire a financial advisor is for emotional discipline. You think you're hiring them because you want help, you know, managing money or because you don't have enough knowledge or what have you. But what you're really doing is purchasing the discipline to stick with, to have a plan that you then can stick with no matter what happens to the market.
I agree 100%. I mean, investing is simple but not easy, and that's where the advisor comes in.
When you look at current events, and in this case, I'm not actually talking specific current events like Brexit or the election that we have going on. I'm just talking about current events in the general sense that there's always something happening. Should investors be looking at those things and going, hey, you know, there is always a current event? There's always been a current event. My entire life has been filled with current events that were current at that point in time. I should just completely tune this out. Should everybody's focus ultimately start with how much can I save? What do I need to grow it into? When do I need to grow it by? And just tune everything else out.
Yeah, absolutely. I think people would do well to focus less on current events, not only in their financial lives, but just in terms of maximizing their happiness. You know, I mean, I'm a psychologist as well, and I was having this conversation with a friend just today that crime in America is down dramatically. You know, war across the world, we've never had a time of greater peace than we're enjoying right now. If you look at the, you know, from the year 1400 to present, killings of police officers are actually down dramatically over the last 20 to 30 years. And yet, if you watch the news, you wouldn't think any of these things. And it comes down to what psychologists call availability bias, which is these things are very top of mind. It's very easy for us to create anecdotal stories around these things. And indeed, they are terrible. The individual instances when they happen are terrible, and they're very sticky in our minds. And yet, you know, if you look over the last 60, 70, 100 years of investing in the U.S., we've had multiple world wars. We've had, on average, a 10% correction every year. for each of the last 100 years, we've had a recession or a depression on average every 6 to 7 years. And over that time, the ability of the market to compound wealth has been staggering. So I think that investors would do very well to turn off the TV, to go live their lives and stick with that plan to the extent possible.
I wrote recently a column that got me plenty of nasty notes. And I said the Dow needs to get to 150,000 in my lifetime. And I sort of provided mathematical proof that it could get there. Do you think that people need to understand that, you know, past may not be prologue in terms of, oh, it's always going to perform this way, but that fundamentally, as much as we talk about the laws of wealth, one of the laws of wealth is going to be that things are going to continue to grow. And oh, by the way, if they grow enough, you're going to see Dow 150 in your lifetime?
I don't know about the specific time frames, but, you know, the history of the market shows that optimists are rewarded. And I mean, I think the general trajectory of American capitalism and just the personal self-fulfillment is up. And I think that the market is remarkably consistent over long periods of time, over what most people view as an investment lifetime, you know, 30, 35 years. There's a remarkable degree of consistency about the level of returns, and that's a great thing. And so, again, the short-termism, this excessive focus on Brexit and current events is actually a great detriment to people, because there is a lot of certainty if you look at what would be your lifetime.
Well, Daniel, this has been great. I really appreciate it. Thanks so much for joining me on Money Life.
Thanks so much for having me.
Daniel Crosby, Dr. Daniel Crosby, is the author of The Laws of Wealth, Psychology and the Secret to Investing Success. Now, we didn't cover too many of those laws, but if you want a preview, well, he wrote a piece on MarketWatch.com where you find my columns. It's linked up at the Money Life Show recent and upcoming guest page as well, where you'll also find links to his firm, NocturneCapital.com, and you'll also find links to Harriman House, the publisher of the book, and more. And by the way, Daniel's on Twitter. He's at Daniel Crosby. We're halfway done with the Wednesday edition of Money Life, but that means we got plenty more to go. So settle back and relax. We're living the money life, and we'll be back to it in just a moment.
Customize an investment portfolio with FlexShares, ETFs designed to pursue targeted goals and to adapt to changing market conditions with both equity and fixed income solutions. For more information, go to FlexShares.com.
Welcome back to Money Life. It's time for the book interview here. You know, the book interview, it's just our big interview, but it's done about a book. And so we make that little distinction so that you know where we're going. And today, the book we are talking about is You Only Live Once, The Roadmap to Financial Wellness and a Purposeful Life. It's written by Jason Vitug. He is my guest here now. But before we get to him, just a quick reminder, you can go to jasonvitug.com. That's V-I-T-U-G for his last name. He's on Twitter at Jason Vitug. And by the way, there's a website specific for the book, www.roadtofinancialwellness.com. So you put it all together, great places to go. And of course, here we are in a show called Money Life. This book is all about finding that right balance. Jason Vitug, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much, Chuck. I'm happy to be on.
I really do spend a lot of time on this show trying to help people find the right balance because, well, money's important, life is more important, and ultimately, other than that famous Jack Handy quote where it says, you know, I really hope that when I die, people will say about me, wow, that guy owed me a lot of money. Other than that, I don't think what we want people saying at the end of our lives is, wow, he was all about the money. And this really does talk about financial wellness as something of a state of mind. Like, it starts almost with mental health.
Absolutely. It does start with the mind. When we're looking at a balance of life and money, life, like as you mentioned, is trumps money, but we need to have that conversation about money in order for us to achieve that dream lifestyle.
But how do people find the right balance? Because money is involved in virtually everything we do. And you'd like to think, oh, I can be immune to it, I can be above it, but it's pretty hard to do that. So how do you find the balance?
We have to start on top. I think there's a lot of focus on the how-to, and we never have a conversation about our own vision for the life that we want to live. And because we don't have this clarity of this dream lifestyle or that vision for the life, we start making financial decisions that don't align to the things that matter to us. So, and if we constantly are in that hamster wheel, we're never going to achieve that balance, because what's going to happen is that we're going to start spending our hard-earned cash on things that don't matter, the things that don't add value, and all of a sudden we're going to find ourselves working just to continue to fuel this machine that we don't necessarily even want.
But for so many people, the things that they are, it's one thing if you're spending your money on clothes and you're a shopaholic or something along those lines, but for so many people, it also comes down to things like debt or what have you, where they've got student loans or they piled up stuff on things that they felt were necessary. And now they're on that hamster wheel because, well, I got to find a way to make these payments. So how do you get out of that cycle if you find yourself in it? Because I mean, there are people out there who definitely they spend the wrong ways and at some point they wake up and smell the coffee. Mm-hmm. But there are others who sort of find themselves in it and now they don't know how to get out. How do you get out? How do you come up with, because I know people who are trying to get out of debt and it's almost like they're trying to get rid of cancer. You know, it's until every bit of it is out of me, I won't be able to rest. Meanwhile, they can't enjoy life.
That's exactly it. I mean, I had $40,000 of student loan and credit card debt. So I've been in that situation, and I've also had this uncontrolled, mindless spending habit that fueled this, because I thought spending was going to provide retail therapy in order for me to kind of feel better about my debt situation. And so there are ways. The first thing is to get a handle of your financial situation. That's increasing your awareness of where you actually are in terms of your income, in terms of your total debt. What I've noticed is that we have this idea of the amount of money that we make, and then also an idea of the amount of debt we have. But we don't have concrete numbers. So we need to start with an increased awareness of the actual numbers that we're working with. And that's a great starting point. And then we need to look at the spending, the expenses, as well as the discretionary spending that we do on a daily basis. And that compounds, of course, or takes us away from achieving our goals. And what I'm talking about here is really something called the budget. And so not many people want to hear that word or no. Think that it's limiting. It's an act of deprivation. But the budget really is a framework. And the reason why people don't follow budgets, it's because we've been doing them incorrectly. We've been doing them in terms of limiting the things that we want to do, as opposed to using it as that blueprint to do the things that we want. And so when you have a clear idea of where you are, you have that vision of where you want to go, and that includes getting out of debt. That includes paying off the student loans and buying that house or that luxury car. Once you're very clear in the components of that dream lifestyle, that vision for your life, you're able to create a budget reflective of that. And so it's no longer something that you think that it's limiting. It is a framework, the blueprint for you to get from where you are to where you want to go. And so that truly is it. It's creating that plan.
Well, and that's actually one of the things that I liked about the book, is that the book sort of gives you that concrete framework that I think people can use to get to a good spot. What I sometimes find difficult in books like this, and I saw it here, and again, could question it, is, of course, one of the things that everyone wants to do, and that any book that's telling you how to improve your life is going to say, is basically go off and improve your income. Well, most people can't just willy-nilly go improve their income. So from that standpoint, you got into some ways that people can try to help themselves out that way. How much do you believe it's possible? You know, hey, if you're out there and you don't have the right balance, you can improve your income without, oh, by the way, seriously degrading your lifestyle by going like, hey, I'm working 8 hours here and then 8 hours there, and I sleep for a couple hours and I do it all over again.
Yeah, I go in the book and I talk about how time is the most valuable asset that we own. And most of us exchange our time, 40 hours of it per week, for a paycheck. And there is a point where there you only have this limited resource. So there's only so many hours that you can continue to exchange in order to increase your income. So there are ways. I like people to start thinking about their current job situation. What are the benefits that are being offered aside from the paycheck? Because that's ways for you to increase your income. There are so many individuals that I speak with on a daily, weekly basis that tell me I'm unable to get that $1 raise that's going to help me start saving or pay off debt. And I tell everyone, and myself included, when I was in that situation, it's like, what's currently available to me? What does my employer offer that I'm not thinking of? And that was college. My organization was paying for college tuition up to a certain amount. So that's money on the table. I needed to increase my 401k contribution because if I wasn't meeting the minimum, I was leaving money on the table as well for that employer match. So there are many ways. So I would say start with your employer, find out about the benefits, the resources that are available that don't necessarily have this specific dollar sign, but there is money associated with it, and that helps you kind of reach some of your other goals in terms of savings, in terms of college. If you're looking at gaining new skill sets, that will make you more valuable as an individual. And so I tend to think, make your time as valuable as possible, so when you're exchanging it for a paycheck, you're getting paid a higher amount as opposed to just working more hours.
One of the things that happens to folks who get into the kind of debt you were in, et cetera, is that when they come to recognize their problems, they also tend to be extremely hard on themselves. And now I've got to get out of debt. I can't spend anything on anything. I can't do all that other sort of stuff. How does somebody find the balance? I mean, you know, you've made a mistake. You don't want to compound it and make it worse, but you don't want to go, wow, it's going to take me X years to pay this off, and in that time, I'm not going to have a minute of fun.
I mean, that's exactly what happened to me. And so when I had $40,000 of student loan credit card debt, that was accumulated from getting my bachelor's degree. And then I doubled down. When I went for my master's, I doubled down to $80,000 because I was in that cycle. And so I thought the answer was to spend more, and that would give me the satisfaction. And I was in this cycle of debt and work and making payments, et cetera, because it is emotional. And one of the key things that I've noticed when I've read tons of books and tons of blog posts is that we focus on the how-tos and not necessarily on where it starts, the root cause. So in order for us to break the cycle, in order for us to remain motivated to change our financial habits, to change our financial situation, we need to start with why are we spending? So asking a series of why and getting to the root cause. We really need to focus on changing financial behaviors, challenging our money beliefs, because that's what's going to propel us to continue to work on that budget, to continue to work on those goals that we've set. Because when we are stressed about our debt situation, I can tell you it is very difficult to get up in the morning. It is very difficult to put 100% on that job that gives us that income. But what's really going to get you going is understanding and changing your money mindset.
Absolutely. If you can make progress, you can keep moving forward. And the more you move forward, the more progress you make. And it becomes a virtuous cycle. And if you want to learn how to get into that virtuous cycle, check out You Only Live Once, The Roadmap to Financial Wellness and a Purposeful Life. It's the book out from Jason Vitug. Jason, thanks so much for joining me on the show.
Thanks so much, Chuck.
You can get more information at jasonvitug.com, at roadtofinancialwellness.com, and you can follow Jason on Twitter, where he's at Jason Vitug. Money Life has plenty more to go, so settle back and relax. We'll be right back.
At Hightower, providing the best fiduciary advice to every advisory client is not just a job, it's a legal duty. Sophisticated asset management, lifetime financial planning and wealth management solutions. At Hightower, it all adds up to peace of mind. Visit HightowerAdvisors.com to learn more about the Hightower difference.
It's time for the big interview.
What is going on here? I demand an explanation.
The big names, the big news, the biggest stories, the next big thing. What's the big deal? It's the big interview.
It's the big stuff.
You talking to me?
Who do you think you are?
We have a big show for you tonight.
Money Life brings you the big thinkers, top experts, the brightest minds.
I don't know how to put this, but kind of a big deal.
And plenty of time to swim in their brain fluid.
Oh, my.
So listen and learn and enjoy the big interview.
The eyes of the nation are on us right now.
Whatever. Fun will now commence.
Well, today I think we are going to help you listen and learn because we're going to take you to a place that we don't go all that often here on Money Life. Specifically, we don't spend a tremendous amount of time talking about global credit markets. And yet, you know when you hear from guests here that there's a lot of things going on in the big picture and in things that are not stocks and what have you that are making for interesting opportunities around the world. So here to discuss credit markets and more is Jeff Rosenkrantz. He's portfolio manager for Cedar Ridge Partners. Now, they run the Cedar Ridge Unconstrained Credit Fund. That's ticker symbol CRUPX. If you want to learn more about the fund or the firm, go to CedarRidgePartners.com. Jeff Rosenkrantz, welcome to Money Life.
Thanks for having me.
So, like I said, this is not an area that we get into all that often. But anybody who's been paying attention since the Brexit knows that, like, okay, the stock market didn't have the craziness that was expected. In fact, it didn't take the big downturn. It instead turned up and had this nice positive run to higher territory. But the credit markets, which get much less attention, they were really frothy as a result of the post-Brexit activity. A little bit down at the beginning and then a bit of a rebound. So are we seeing things play out there that aren't playing out everywhere else? Or is that was the reaction we expected or should have expected, and it just happened that that's the only market that it happened in?
Well, it's a good question. I think it was similar. There was an initial knee-jerk reaction lower in price in terms of IG and high-yield credit and wider in spread, but it was very short-lived. And within a few days, we were back to and exceeding pre-Brexit levels.
The phrase that I keep hearing when it comes to the credit market is lower for longer. So we're going to wind up seeing rates stay much lower for much longer than we perhaps thought they were going to be. Is that where you see things right now?
Well, that certainly is the conventional wisdom right now. And what it's doing, the low rates that we're seeing around the world, which are intended to spur economic activity off a very, very low or anemic base, and it's not really working. So what can be done? We can try to drive them lower and keep them low for longer. And so the conventional wisdom is that that's going to persist for some time. What that's really doing, it's having a lot of repercussions and knock-on effects. It's forcing people who need to get some kind of yield or return in the credit markets, they're having to go either further out in duration or further down in quality to try and get some more spread or more yield. And so on top of that, you have Draghi and the EU actually purchasing corporate fixed income securities. And so on top of what's going on in government bonds around the world, you're now having it to a certain effect in corporate bonds in Europe, and it's crowding out investors and forcing them into corners or sectors of the market or places where they might not otherwise want to go, and they're reaching in terms of duration or credit risk to try and get some yield and some return.
You know, you talk about corporate credits and places that people have been going, one of the places that people have been going in the credit market for a while, chasing for yield, has been to the energy side of things, especially high yield energy and high yield energy credits. We've now seen a decline in oil prices that people are saying it's going to be extended. And although there was a point where folks thought maybe we were going to get back to higher rate oil, well, that now also, it seems like we're in for lower for longer when it comes to oil and energy as well. So what's been going on in that space? And is that a case where you think that a lot of people who were chasing yield are going to wind up getting burned?
It's a very good observation, and underscored by, you know, Wednesday's oil industry data report. The recovery in oil from the lows has been a huge driver of sentiment and return in the high yield market, and also I would add in the investment grade credit markets as well. And since late June, early July, as the oil prices started to come down, you have not yet seen a corresponding down move in the high yield market. Fund flows have been quite strong into investment grade and high yield bond funds for the reasons we just talked about. And so those technical forces are propping up prices, or, you know, then the cash that has come in is being put to work and supporting levels. But on fundamentals, at current oil prices, even if they don't go any lower, we would think that that would translate to maybe a 5% pullback in the high yield market, give or take.
So ultimately, when we hear this, I want to help folks understand, as we're talking about credit markets and we're talking about a fund like yours, and again, it is the Cedar Ridge Unconstrained Credit Fund, which, by the way, is a long, for my audience, it's a long short fund that is up about 5% this year at the top of its category year to date. And how does somebody wind up using that? Because if we're in that lower for longer environment, you still have the average investor thinking stocks, bonds, cash, you know, diversify internationally, et cetera. But what's an appropriate way to use a fund like yours in this market? Because, of course, long short means you're built for all market conditions. Some are going to work better than others, but you're built for all market conditions. So what's the way somebody winds up using this, so that they don't go off and make the mistakes of, hey, let me chase high yield energy credits and, you know, get burned?
It's a great question. And so we think it's a good complement to people's existing fixed income portfolios. So as we are in a low yield environment, just clipping yield or clipping coupons or just buying the yield in the market right now is not going to get you very far towards your goals. We think that over a longer, medium to longer period of time, rates are likely to go higher. They may stay low, maybe go a little lower, and they may stay here for a little while, but eventually this ends badly. And so we think having the flexibility to be both long and short, given where we are in the credit cycle and in the credit markets, makes all the sense in the world. And so we're not a yield fund. We're not buying things to just clip a coupon. We're a total return fund. So we get up every day trying to identify winners and losers in the investment grade and high yield corporate markets and in the municipal bond markets. And so having that flexibility to look for winners and losers is incredibly important. As we've talked about, you know, we think that certain sectors of this credit market are overbought or are rich, and so we think it's a good time to have that flexibility to also be short credits and take advantage of what we think will be higher rates, wider spreads, and lower prices in some of these segments of the market.
quickly, if you had to guess, what do you think the Fed is going to do for, say, the rest of this year, and when does that translate into any action on the credit market?
I'll answer the second part of the question first. I'm not sure it does have an impact. The technical forces are sort of overwhelming anything that the Fed may be trying to do here. And so, you know, fund flows coming from places around the world where there is no yield or negative yields, where they can still get a few percent in U.S. credit or in treasuries, get 1.5% on a 10-year treasury is better than nothing. So will the Fed, unlikely they go this summer or ahead of the election, but one 25 basis point increase before the end of the year is sort of a nominal or token move is definitely a possibility. But I don't think that in and of itself is going to have much of an impact on the credit markets. I think things like oil prices are more likely to have a more profound impact.
Well, Jeff, this has been very interesting. Thanks so much for taking time out to join me on Money Life.
My pleasure, Chuck. Thanks for having me.
Jeff Rosenkranz is portfolio manager for Cedar Ridge Partners and the Cedar Ridge Unconstrained Credit Fund. CRUPX is the investor shares. For more information on the firm or the fund, go to CedarRidgePartners.com. We are just about done with the July 28th edition of Money Life, but just about means not quite. So stick with us and we'll cross the finish line together when Money Life returns right after this message.
PowerShares provides a different take on traditional asset categories while providing advisors and investors with innovative investment opportunities. For more information, go to PowerShares.com. Invesco Distributors Incorporated.
Back to Money Life. I'm Chuck Jaffe, senior columnist for MarketWatch, host of this show every weekday. Thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it. And I hope you enjoyed this show. Like I said, when we do stuff that's different, I like it if you let me know. And you don't have to be nice about it. Like, seriously, when I ask this, I'm not asking for you to tell me, oh, Chuck, I love the show. Everything's fabulous. That's not it. If you think we've made a bad decision, we had a bad guest on, you disliked an interview, you found somebody particularly boring, you know, any of those things, that's important for me. I mean, I can't promise you, like, oh, we're going to do everything that you want us to do. I can't do that either. And there are definitely times when we're going to live up to what we consider our mandate. Our mandate is to find that right balance. It's why we call the show Money Life. So, you know, as I'm reading Jason Vitug's book, I can certainly see who it's right for. I certainly see an audience that can be inspired by it. But I can also see an audience that would be jaded by it. And then there's a whole bunch of folks who wouldn't need it at all because they have proper balance and they're in good shape. You know, the same sort of thing, actually, with Dr. Crosby's book. Now, I like his book. I actually like it more of the two books we're dealing with today. And I like the fact that his laws were not like, hey, let me lay down a bunch of rules of thumb that you can follow. But at the same time, I'm not sure you're going to learn anything from his book that you don't already know. If you're listening to this show each day and you haven't said, oh, I want to ignore everything and be a day trader or something along those lines, I don't think there's something that you're going to suddenly pick up and go, oh, now I get it. I mean, it is very well known that investors shoot themselves in the foot all the time. It is commonplace knowledge. And you've got plenty of studies that show it, although there are people now questioning some of those studies, and we may actually get one of those folks on the show in the not-too-distant future. But when you get to the spot where you're going, hey, I'm trying to become a savvy investor, I'm trying to do the right things, well, you may not do all the right things, You may break certain rules. You may do things that you feel more comfortable with. I mean, I always give the example of when my dad was alive and my dad was investing. He could never buy small cap. He knew he should diversify that way. But truthfully, he didn't need additional return. He needed security and safety. And every time he got small cap names, he didn't recognize them. He'd get extra nervous, and that'd be a problem. You don't need that kind of headache if you've gotten to where you don't mind the fact that you're missing out on the extra potential return that small caps give you, and you don't mind losing out on the diversification benefits. He didn't mind. He didn't need the other things, so that's fine. You don't have to invest by the book. And I think there comes a point where you understand this stuff, but it still was good to hear it, and we all need a refresher. We really do. Sometimes I'm like, I hope those books come at the times when I'm going, oh, what do I want to do? I've got, you know, my broker, who's a friend of mine, asking me questions going, hey, did you see we just downgraded this stock? You may need to decide if you want to do something. Yep, I may, but I may not. All right, we've got big things planned the rest of this week. Of course, that's tomorrow. You're going to have Dan Zanger on the show from Chart Pattern, Scott Collier from Advisors Asset Management, Greg McBride. They'll be here for sure. You'll have to see what the rest of the show is going to be. Thanks to my guests today, Jason Vitug, Daniel Crosby, Jeff Rosenkranz, and Simeon Hyman standing in for Tom Lydon. Thanks to Rob Floyd, my producer, and thanks so much to you for being here. I really appreciate each and every day when you're with me. Today's Money Life quote of the day comes from Adam Davidson, who said, economics is all about consumption. People either spend money now or they use financial instruments like bonds, stocks, and saving accounts so they can spend more later. But whatever you're going to do, whether you spend it now or you spend it later, I hope you remember that, hey, until we do this again the next time, the best thing you can do for your money is not worry too much about it. Have a great day, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.
The opinions expressed on Money Life are those of the host and guests only and reflect their personal thinking. They are not to be taken as representative policy or strategy of the organization that the host or guest represents. This show is a production of Money Life Radio, Inc., which retains all rights to its content. This broadcast, either in part or in its entirety, may not be retransmitted, reproduced, or rebroadcast without the express consent of Money Life Radio, Inc. This show is an informational service only. The information here is not to be considered a direct and personal recommendation for any individual to make a specific financial decision or transaction, but rather is meant as an informal resource to help investors make informed decisions. Always consult your financial advisor, accountant, or attorney before making any major financial decision. The information provided has been obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable, but is not guaranteed for either its accuracy or completeness.
Well, friends, like all great things, this too must end.